Welcome to Real Jam Radio. I'm Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to have you with us. This is part two of the Over-Under recap podcast. Arturo Galletti of Basketball Numbers came on before the season, and we did Over-Unders. We had to split that one, too, into Eastern and Western conferences, and guess what? We had to do the same here because we had a lot to talk about, which is a great thing. This one runs a little bit longer. I think it's about an hour and a half. And we go through all the teams. You should have timestamps if you care about that in the description. Hope you enjoy it. Portland, when we did the podcast, had the lowest over-under win projection in the entire Western Conference. We both loved and worshipped the over, and guess what? We're right.
Way over. Like, Portland does a really good job at finding talent. They're well coached, and we liked the guys that they brought. I mean, they lost some really good, great players. Because you can see that from the impact those guys have had on the teams they've gone to. But they brought in, they got these guys from benches and from other places in draft, and they built a decent team. It's not a great team, but it's a really competitive team. I believe Portland has the lowest amount of salary under the cap right now. They have the lowest payroll in the league.
The Sixers and I think it's the Sixers and the Magic do, but functionally speaking, they're all about the same. They're all within a couple million.
Right. So they've done it. They've done a fantastic job. And this is guys I like. This is what we're looking at. We like the guys they brought in. They did a really interesting job.
Right.
And so if you're a Portland fan, you should be really excited that this team knows what they're doing.
Well, the way I describe what they did is that what Olshay, his job as the Portland general manager the last summer, is the blueprint that any GM should do. And that doesn't mean, exactly the same thing, because not every team has Damian Lillard, has CJ McCollum. But the core part of it, and I mentioned this earlier in the podcast, is no bad contracts. Every guy they signed, whether they were the perfect fit or a bad fit, whatever it was, they were on a contract that at the deadline next year, that they would be able to live with. And a lot of those guys are outperforming their expectations. And
fantastic. Like, everybody loved Ed Davis on the Lakers. We loved Ed Davis, and they got him for a steal. They got Bird. They got Gerald Henderson is decent. Al-Farouq Aminu is with them, right, this year?
Yeah. He signed a reasonable contract. Yeah, all those guys.
They got all these guys. And, Al-Farouq Aminu has some offensive limitations, for example. But if he's playing next to Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, those don't matter that much. This is the team that's the exact opposite of the Magic. Whereas the Magic basically play the guys together and have problems with rotations, the Portland rarely plays. Portland does two things. They play McCollum and Damian Lillard as much as they can away from each other, and they never. I think it's over the course of this year. They played exactly 7 minutes without without either Lillard or CJ McCollum on the court, right?
Yeah, and tonight they had more, but that was because it was garbage time because the Celtics blew them out.
Garbage time is garbage time, but this is a team that's does really maximizes what they do. They, as you said, they didn't sign any bad contracts. They got a bunch of really good young guys from other teams, and they're really well positioned because they have all this money, right? So they have no bad contract. It's a little bit kind of an accelerated masterclass of what the Sixers are trying to do, but these guys do it really well. And again, we loved it because we also love the coach, right? So we love the coach, we love the system. What's the upside on this team for this year?
They could scare a team in the first round. They could. I don't know that I wouldn't have them beating anybody in the top half, but they could take a team to six, maybe even seven.
Yeah, Lillard and McCollum can each win them a game. And the problem is they're gonna get either Golden State or San Antonio or Oklahoma. I think OKC is their best bet probably. And an OKC Portland series in the first round would be amazing.
It'd be so much fun.
It's so much fun. They're not gonna. I think they'd probably beat the Clippers, but they're not getting the Clippers in the first round.
Probably not.
Given, this is a really young team that's going to be better at the end of the year. They have the advantage. They have guys who've been there before, right?
If they were in the East, I would love this team against so many of their matchups. It's just another top 16 argument, whatever you want to say. They just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. If your goal is winning a playoff series, but I don't think that should be a big priority for them right now.
Portland versus Cleveland in a series.
Cleveland, but I could see Portland taking some games and potentially winning it.
Yeah, Portland would have the Cavs fans scared for a couple games.
For sure.
Yeah, because it's a really fun team, and it's really well coached, and I admired basically, if there's any justice in the world, their GM's going to win GM of the year, basically.
Yeah, you really I completely agree with that.
Because, like, you know...
Well, or RC.
Because,
I mean, what they did to be able to keep their whole team together in Adel Marcus, even though it hasn't worked perfectly, is awfully impressive.
As much as I admire the Spurs, I mean, yeah, let's argue the Spurs are going to win 70 games, but as much as I admire the Spurs, what Portland did was way, way harder, and they did it with the smallest payroll in the league. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I would have no problem with Olshay getting it. Zero problem whatsoever, even though I probably wouldn't pick him if I had a vote.
No, I agree with your point, but I would for Olshay. I think he did a fantastic job.
Denver Nuggets, over-under was set at 27. We both liked the under but said to stay away, and it looks like I think they'll probably go over it by a little bit. I like a lot of what they've done.
I actually looked at their win total. The only team I looked at their win total. So Denver has won 23 games, and it's 27, and I don't know that they're going to win that many games the rest of the season because the tank is in effect right now. And you can't really blame them. I think that they've got some fantastic pieces. Jokic is great. Jokic is a really good piece. But you'll know, like, if you look at their game logs, his minutes have been – they've been – kind of controlling his minutes because I think they're not in. Moutier, who was at one point about 800 minutes of the season, he was like having one of the worst seasons of all time, is actually recovered. I mean, he's a 19-year-old point guard, so I don't.
How's he look to you in the last month or so?
He's been better. He's been playing like he's not showing up in the extreme edge. He's playing like he's playing like a rookie point guard. I think that I give him full benefit of the doubt for the season. He's getting smarter about what he does, right?
Yeah.
So he's taking
less bad shots.
Yeah, for the first 3 months of the season, whenever he was on the court, basically opposing point guards feasted. That's not quite the case. He's gotten to the point where they're league average. And I was giving Jameer credit for that, but like Jameer's out. So he's doing a much better job now.
He is.
This is, again, they have – Jokic is another one, another fantastic big man in this draft. They have other –
In this rookie class, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they have some really talented players on this team. Again, I don't think that it's in their best interest to keep winning this year. I think they're going to kind of, once now that Gallo's out, and it just get a good draft pick and move on. At this point.
They actually got their 24th win tonight because they played the tire fire that is the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yes, the Lakers.
But we're not on them yet because the team that's in between is Minnesota. Minnesota's over-under was set at 27.5. We both strongly agreed to stay away. I said slightly over, you said slightly under, but the emphasis was to staying away, and that was the right call.
Right now I have it as a push. They're projected as 28. And here's the thing, right? Carl Anthony Towns may be the best player drafted in the last 20 years, right?
It's possible because... Well, no, he's not better than LeBron. Best since LeBron, best excluding LeBron in the last 20 years, I would be fine with saying. But LeBron, I mean, that was a different thing.
LeBron wasn't this good at 19.
Yeah, but what he showed, I mean, at that point, what I saw in him was the possibility of being able to run an offense and defend at 3, which is insanely valuable.
I had to adjust my models to account for his defense about halfway through the season. Basically, he's that good defensively against fives.
What I've noticed is that he's a lot better, which is the least surprising thing in the world, that he's a lot better when KG's in. He's been a little bit shakier outside that, but he's still quite good. I mean, we're talking about a 20-year-old.
Let's keep in mind that basically Minnesota's probably... I was going to say, Sam Mitchell is in the... he's in the same club as Byron Scott. He's not quite as bad as Byron Scott, but he's in the unfrozen caveman coach club. And this is probably one of the worst coach teams. I mean, it's hard. They're like when you're with Byron Scott, I can't say you're the worst coach team in the West, but they're kind of. I gotta say they're the second worst coach team in the West. No,
it's hard to think of who would be ahead of them.
And again, it's just Sam. Like they just run like really bad. They run really bad offense on this team, and they do things that are kind of like head scratching. And I mean, I think Towns is fine. I think Levine has actually progressed really, really well. This is kind of an understatement. He's gotten way better as a player. Wiggins really worries me because
I was going to ask you about that.
I've made the comparison. He's basically Rudy Gay. And people forget Rudy Gay was really highly touted. Rudy Gay got a max contract. Rudy Gay was like considered the best player on the Grizzlies, but it's the same kind of problem. He can't hit a shot and they're pumping the usage through him and he's going to get rich taking bad shots because of this offense. And once you connect, like once as a player, you connect taking bad shots to getting rich, right? This is really, really dangerous, particularly like if it's the same thing that happened to those Grizzlies teams that had Rudy Gay. It's like they were better without Rudy. And it wasn't because Rudy's been an effective player on the Kings as like a second or third option, right? But if people remember what he was on the Grizzlies and the tire fire he was on the Raptors as a 20, 25, 30% usage guy, then you got to go look at Wiggins and go like, this is not really good for his development, right?
That's a big part of it. And the second aspect, which is starting to really concern me, is that he has a lot of defensive potential. Like, you look at his tools, his athleticism, his length, but he is not a good defender right now.
Yeah, his defensive numbers are, people are like, oh, he's a great defender, he's a better defender. Like, he's not.
He's no, he's not. He's really not. And so
He's been a garbage fire defender since he was in college. I've got numbers for him in college, and he was a garbage. Like, he's got the physical skills. All they're having him do is, like, take these bad shots. Like, he doesn't rebound. He doesn't really kind of, like, do other things. And again, he has the skills. But really, the problem is, like, I kind of have this feeling it's going to become – we could be in a situation where he's, like, the third or fourth best player on this team next year, right? Because I think Levine's progressing. Levine's actually getting better and running off the ball and doing things. And Karl-Anthony Towns is clearly the best player on this team, right? And Gordy Dang has actually become an effective NBA – like, they're starting to use him properly, right? So I'm worried that Wiggins is – it's going to be like a in Memphis where, like, it's not – and they're similar, right? And it's not on him. It's just they're asking him to do things that, like, a modern NBA team can't do, right? You could do this 20 years ago, but you can't do it now. Like, if you're taking these long contested twos or doing the usage or basically playing that Kobe-style ball, that is the wrong ball to be playing in the modern era, right? And once you – what I'm worried with Wiggins is he's at a point in his development that if he basically – once he becomes indoctrinated to this, it's going to be a real problem, right?
Yeah,
he has all the tools, but he's not – converting those tools into actual on-the-court production. And I think Mitchell is probably the worst possible coach he could have at this point in his career.
I think he can figure it out, but he hasn't yet. And while perception doesn't really matter in terms of that, you know, people saying he's a better defender than he is, it doesn't really affect anything. But he's going to have to figure that out anyway. You know, he's going to have to get there. I don't doubt that he can. I just doubt a little bit that he will. But we'll move on to the Lakers. This will probably be short. I said the Vegas over-under was at 28.5. You were lukewarm on the under. I love the under, and the under is a winner.
Well, I mean, I think the issue was I kind of liked their give you credit, I liked the talent on this team, but I forgot that Byron Scott is the worst coach. He may be over the last 5 years, he may be the worst coach in the history of the NBA. I believe he basically something like – if you compare him to the Sixers, he's something like 20 – I haven't done this in a while, but 20 to 25 games worse than the Sixers over this course of time. And his teams have all been bottom five in defense. He's a tire fire. He's horrendous. And this team at times is just terrible to watch. What's interesting, have you watched a lot of the Lakers?
A fair amount.
There's an interesting thing that happens on this team when Kobe's off the floor and somebody like Hibbert or Bass are on the floor. Where, like, all of a sudden they start playing, the ball starts moving around, and you can see Bass and Hibbert coaching this team on the floor.
Yeah.
And like they start moving the ball and doing things, and like they're doing, like, you see the things you see with, like, D'Angelo Russell's doing things and Jordan Clarkson is doing things. It's great. And I think it's happening. It's the same thing that used to happen with Chris Paul and Jason Kidd when they're coached by Byron Scott, where I've come to the conclusion that Byron Scott had nothing to do with what was actually happening on the floor. Right. I'm fairly certain it was Kidd and Chris Paul doing things. Right. Let's just say this, Laker fans, right? I'll say this as a Celtics fan. The possibility that Byron Scott will not get fired this offseason makes me smile when I go to sleep.
As a neutral basketball fan, it makes me incredibly sad. And I don't think it's going to happen. I think they'll have a new coach. But what you said, I think, is really relevant to this. And what I thought the goal of the season, and of course, if you want to showcase Kobe, that can be a thing. I don't really have a whole ton of opposition to that, especially considering the whole thing with their pick. But what they have to do is they have to properly evaluate what they have. And the way that I said they should do that is that they should play Russell, Clarkson, not Kobe, Randall, and the best defender they have at the five, whoever that is on that given day. And you see if it works. You know, if it works. And one of the problems is they don't really have a small forward that makes a lot of sense with that group, because Nick Young doesn't resolve the problems that Kobe creates just a little bit. He just makes them a little bit different. And we haven't seen enough of that. That's what this team needed to do, is say, okay, what is D'Angelo Russell? I think we know that he's good. He's done a very nice job the last month or 2 months or so, and I've always liked him. I thought he was a good player. Clarkson, a little shakier. Randall, not a soul. But I don't think we have enough right now to say any of those things definitively. And when you have to choose what probably will be another top three draft pick, you need to know, because if any of those guys is good enough that you're not going to take somebody at their position, you have to be dead set on that.
Yeah, the problem is, like, so I think they're gonna have a chance to get address some of these needs in the offseason. The thing is, if Byron Scott's your coach, you're not getting anybody. Nobody. Nobody's coming to play with you if Byron Scott is your coach. And it's kind of, they should understand that. I mean, like, and again, I don't know that I want to, do I want to waste another year of Russell and Randall and Clarkson under Byron Scott? No, give me a real coach. Like, yeah.
There's no argument at this point.
Scotty Brooks is tan, rested, and ready, right? Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't want to necessarily help them, but like, there are moves that they could have made to make this a lot more attractive in the offseason. You know, this, again, we mentioned Batum again. Batum would be a great fit for that young team. Like, he'd be a good piece to add because he makes sense. Hey, let's add a small forward who's a veteran who knows what he's doing. He's played with young guys before, right? But like, I don't know that, why would you come to that tire fire if you're a free agent? I mean, like, unless it's a paycheck, but like, I don't know that, I don't see that, like, the guys you want are not guys that are necessarily coming to the Lakers, and it's like in this offseason.
Yeah. Since they won their last title, so of course that's more important, this will be the stretch from June 15th to July 15th, or a little bit later, will be the most important month in this franchise's recent history.
Yeah, one point for the Lakers, which is important, is like, so I didn't go to Sloan this year, but I went the year before, and they were the only team not there. So they're and I've said this on Twitter. I've said, like, I would be willing to take their analytics department with my laptop, and I'm sure I could beat them. They probably have the worst analytics of any team in the NBA. And again, here's the thing. This wasn't the case when they had Phil in there, because Phil and more than Phil Tex and some of his coaches, those guys, a lot of those guys actually do analytics. But the guys that they have there are all these cavemen, like the unfrozen caveman coaches that, like, oh, numbers, ah, three. Blah. And really, you can't be that way. You have to kind of be smart, because the teams that are smart about these things, right? It's like, the teams that are smart about these things are teams that are winning, right? And really, the Lakers, I mean, like, I mean, I don't count the Lakers as a team that, or like the Lakers and their Phil, as a team that wasn't eliminated. But basically, if you look at the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, the teams that make finals are all teams that, like, know what's going on or are smart. And the Lakers and the Lakers organization right now are the definition of not smart.
Along the same lines, Sacramento Kings. This is one of my favorite things. So the Kings line jumped a lot. It ended up at 35. They were the only team that you and I both said push, and the 538 projection is exactly 35.
It was 35, 538 said 45. We like 35, and they're projected at 35 right now.
And we said stay away for exactly that reason.
Ah, the Kings. Man, the Kings are a tire fire for multiple reasons.
But Bookie's good. He's not great.
I'm a boogie skeptic. I remain a boogie skeptic. He's just slightly below a net positive player, basically. And again, the problem with Boogie, right? It's similar to Melo in that he really, in the best case scenario, is not your primary option on offense, right? Because you want him as a threat, but you want to run things off him and have guys who can shoot around him. And this team, like, I think you'd probably be better off if he was, like, maybe, like, 10%, maybe 5 to 10% less usage and doing slightly different things. And, again, he also kind of takes games off, too, right? So he's not – so again, I don't want him as the character guy or the main guy on my team. I probably prefer if he was, like, the second or third guy on the team, right? And adding him and Rondo and – like, this is – a bit of the Island of Misfit Funness. They don't quite have enough talent. And we thought it was like, they did all these moves, but they did all these moves to get to about 35, 36 wins, right?
What's terrifying about them is that when you, I kind of like Willie Cauley-Stein. I've always liked his defensive potential, but outside of him, this team doesn't have young guys where you're sitting there going, oh, blank guy is going to get better. And when you're as bad as they are, with as many draft assets owed as they do, you want to have these, even if they're lottery tickets, even if they're 5 to 10% chance guys of working out, and they have almost none of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird kind of, I mean, it was always a weird roster. I mean, like, Rondo's not staying. And here's the thing, I malign Rudy Gay, but Rudy Gay is actually, at the price where he's at, the role he's at, he's actually a good player. Although, I mean, kind of Caspi is kind of effective, but he's not bad for that. And Boogie is wasted on the Kings, basically. That's the problem. he's wasted because he'd be better in another situation. He has all the talent in the world, but like and an asset. So who would you rather have? Same price, same salary, him or Carl Anthony Towns?
Moving forward?
Yeah, right now, like for the next 5 years.
Oh, I'd definitely rather have Towns. I think I'd probably, depending, of course, on constituent talent, I would rather have Cousins for the rest of this season, like if it was just, you know, for the stretch run. But, of course, it would depend on surrounding talent.
Yeah, but what are they doing? Like, they're not qualified for the playoffs.
Yeah, it's they're in a really bad spot, and they have this weird pick protection issue with the Bulls. So, yeah, I don't know what they're doing.
They basically, they pulled the Nets, but at least, the Nets, if they'd actually remained, the Nets possibly could have done something when they did that. I mean, there was
Nets had a ceiling. That's the difference. Is the Kings are? It's not like they've been shockingly bad or that they've disappointed this year. They've done exactly what we expected them to do, and they're not. Not only are they not good enough to like make the playoffs, they're miles away from making noise, which is really what the goal should be. If your goal is just to make the playoffs, and this is another thing about a team we're going to talk about in a couple minutes, if that's what you're going for and you're giving up assets for it, you're thinking about it the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, again, I love George Carroll, but this is, man, I always thought this was just like just a rough situation. Again, the other problem is like they don't have enough shooting on this team, and this is all like how do you win in the West with Rudy Gay and Rajon Rondo in your starting lineup?
The bigger question for me than that is how have they not figured out that the way to win with DeMarcus Cousins is to add shooting? It's basically the easiest team building thing. This isn't a modern NBA thing. This isn't in anything. It's like you have a big dude who does pretty well in the paint and who can randomly now shoot some threes. Put shooters around him. This isn't rocket science. This isn't anything new. Just do it.
You think they could have gotten Jay Crowder at some point?
No. I don't think they could have gotten Jay Crowder. Well, I mean, because Jay Crowder was given up in the Rondo trade, and there's nothing. They couldn't have made the Rondo trade because they didn't have anybody as good as Rondo, even though that was a mistake.
Oh, and we haven't even talked about the car fire that was like the whole thing with George Karl and how they basically they fired him, but they didn't fire him because they don't want to pay him severance.
Yeah, I don't even really think we need to talk about that. I mean, everybody kind of knows where they are with that, and it's disappointing, it's disconcerting, it's all that, but I think that there isn't really much more we need to say on it, so we can move to a different tire fire, which is the Phoenix Suns. Their over-under was set at 36.5. I liked the under, you wouldn't have touched the over, and I was right.
I said over, but I won't touch it. There were a lot of, I remember at the beginning of the season, the thing is like, I mean, like I like the talent on the squad, right, so... In a vacuum, Tyson Chandler, Brandon Knight, Derek Bledsoe. Basically, this team is like, are any of the opening day starters still on this team playing?
Well, Tyson Chandler's playing.
Well, I don't think he started opening day.
Oh, because he was hurt?
He was hurt. Like, this team, like, again, this team
I don't
is
remember
just, like,
who started for them opening night.
So, I mean, again, I think, let's look at, like, you know, basically you lost, like, Eric Bledsoe's a top defender, on-ball defender. I've got defensive stats going back, like, 30 years, and the season where he played with Chris Paul, that Clippers team was probably the best wing, like on-ball defense, like in the last 30 years. And it was like partly because of Paul, but partly because the second guy was Bledsoe, and so they were blitzing people like for 48 minutes at the point of attack. But so once Bledsoe like went down, the defense on this team completely disappeared. Like they can't cover anybody to save their lives. And I mean, it's you can't do much about it. The whole thing with Markieff and Marcus was bad. Because the thing that always struck me about that is like, I don't know why the hell they didn't back the coach, right? So fine, just like you, eventually they got rid of both of them. I don't realize why don't just get rid of Markieff and just, you know, I mean, the coach wasn't bad.
Agreed.
Just you can't blame him for this year because like he lost all his players. He didn't have anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they have some positives. I like Devin Booker.
Sure.
Alex Len sometimes looks like an NBA player.
TJ Warren's interesting.
I mean, they don't have enough at this point. I think when they get all their guys back, it'd be good. It's a weird because this team was really promising, like just was 2 years ago, and they just, I mean, they just kind of getting rid of Dragic, getting rid of Isaiah Thomas. These guys are NBA players who are being effective on other teams, and it's Phoenix. I mean, like I don't give them credit for being well run, and I think that's kind of been the problem. I think. You know, Robert Sarver couldn't keep Sarver still owns this team, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so Sarver couldn't keep Kerr happy, and like they have a history of just like not being very smart, and it does look like they've kind of reverted to form.
So their opening night starting five was Bledsoe, Knight, Tucker, Markieff, and Tyson Chandler. So Knight Knight didn't play. He didn't play today. I think he's hurt right now. But PJ Tucker's playing a little bit. Tyson Chandler's playing a little bit.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay.
But their best players aren't playing.
Yeah.
And Bledsoe is their team, really. Like, Bledsoe, he would have been an all-star if he had stayed healthy. Like, this was, like, he and Derek Favors were the two guys who, like, they would have been clear-cut all-stars for me, and then they didn't stay healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a team, they would have been, they were 36. I think they probably could have made that 36. I think now
yeah,
they're
sure.
definitely in the
36. Certainly.
And I think we both were kind of like, we wouldn't touch it, because it was the bottom, and, like, there was always the possibility of this happening. I mean, this is kind of sad at this point. But hey, you got Devin Booker, right? So that's Devin Booker is a really good player.
He is
6'6". He's 19, I believe. He's 6'6". He can jump. He can do things. Like, I think he's going to be really good in a couple of years.
Yeah, we both really like him. Dallas over under was set at 36.5. We both said stay away, but you like the over. I like the under. And Rick Carlisle never disappoints.
Well, I think Carlisle, I like the fact that they added Zaza. Again, the reason I like the under for Milwaukee, the reason I like the over for Dallas is like, hey, add a competent rim protecting center. And again, I think Chandler Parsons has been really good for this team. They do a lot of work on that team at like finding ways to keep their guys healthy, right? There's some interesting like articles you can like read on Cuban talking about like looking into like medical ways and training and all the things he does for the team. And they do a really good job at like getting these guys to look healthy. Deron Williams has actually looked like himself for a couple games this season, right? So like the old self. Ray Felton looking like a competent NBA player. And I think that adds up. I mean, it's an interesting team. I don't know what the upside is for this team.
No, but they don't need to have it. You know, they're fighting for this year, and they have an absence of their own draft pick, so they kind of have to deal with that. But, you know, they're living for the moment, and they're doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think that it's one of those where, you know, I mean, again, I like, this is a fun, I've watched them. I mean, I think partly, keep in mind, they've also lost some teams, right? So like, they've lost some games, like, just because they're trying to keep their guys healthy. Do you think they're a player for somebody in the offseason?
Maybe. It's hard to really know for sure.
Like, if I'm Dwight, this is a team I might consider, right?
Yeah, but I'm not sure Cuban wants to be the guy who pays Dwight. You know, like, I intuitively, there are parts of that. The other guy who's going to get paid off of this team is Chandler Parsons. I don't know if he'll get paid by Dallas or someone else, but he's going to get paid.
And, oh, I forgot to mention Wes Matthews. Wes Matthews actually been surprised. We didn't expect Wes Matthews to play. But,
especially not opening night. Didn't he play? He played really early. It might not have been opening night.
I think he played opening night, yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
Which was incredible. It's like, it's like him and MKD coming back. But like, I mean, again, they do a really good job of maximizing what they have. And, you know, more power to them, you know?
We will move on to the Utah Jazz. Utah was projected to have, was 42.5 was the over-under was set at. We both like the over. And the reason they might not get it is because the injury bug hit them harder than I think we both expected.
I'm not willing to give it up yet. They're like the line is at 42. They're 39. They did lose tonight. Well, they're playing now. They lost.
They lost yesterday.
They've been on a away trip. I think this team is better than their record. They haven't been playing that well recently, but like I think I don't know. It's like I like the talent on this team, right? So I like them now that they're healthy with Hayward and Favors and Gobert. The problem is they're kind of been having to rely on, in case of emergency, break glass and get like Shelvin Mack as your point guard. And while Shelvin Mack is better than Raul Neto, right? I don't know that Shelvin Mack is I don't know why, like, they got Shelvin Mack. Couldn't they have gotten Schroeder? Maybe, like, I don't know what the Hawks were, like, asking
for. I bet the Hawks were asking for a lot. Utah's going to be good next year. Like, if they can get anything from the point guard spot, you know, if they can get an upgrade, even just Exum, you know, if they can get an upgrade, they'll be so much better.
I don't know the financials on this, but let's say in a vacuum, Exum for Schroeder, would you do that?
No.
If you're Utah?
No, because Schroeder is, first of all, he's very close. I think next year is the last year he has on the rookie scale. Might be another year. I can't remember whether this is second or third year. But he's one of those guys. He's clearly not a max caliber player, so he's going to be properly paid or overpaid.
Is he a starting quality point guard in the NBA?
Not to me. Not right now. You know, he could be eventually. I don't think so. He could be. You know, like, he has the potential, but I don't trust him. The most important thing for a point guard is to be able to run a competent offense, and I don't trust him to do that yet.
What about trying to maybe get Teague?
Teague is too old for them. he's, you know, he would help them this year, but I don't really see the point.
I'm talking about the guys who were available. He was available. George Hill was available. What about
The guy who I was intrigued by for them is Drew Holiday, because the Pelicans are kind of a tire fire, and
I'd rather have George Hill than, like, if I'm
the Pacers aren't going to give up George Hill without getting any point guard in return, because that kills them this year.
I mean, like, I think, like, they were a point. I mean, they went out and got Shelvin Mack, and Shelvin Mack's okay.
Yeah, but they gave up nothing for him. That's different. You wouldn't be able to get a guy like that.
Bargain bin point. They have the problem with Utah, right? Is they have no point guard right now. So they have all these great pieces, but they can't run an offense. It's a little bit like what happens with the Sixers, but, like, really the sad part is, like, these guys have actual skill. Like, if they can get some competent point guard play, I keep expecting, like, they could. They're going to be, like, if they have competent point guard play, they're going to be the team that nobody wants in the first round of the Western playoffs.
Yeah, I've been thinking about a Jazz-Clippers series for a while, but they're not going to get up that high.
Yeah, I thought they were maybe going to figure it out, but they haven't. And it's sad because these guys, they have the pieces, right? They have the pieces. They're just missing. Like, and again, the thing I mentioned Exum because I'm not sure that Exum is an NBA player.
We're going to have to see, because, I mean, he was a teenager last year and had some distinct flaws, but it's going to be different. You know, we'll have to see. I honestly don't know where he's going to be. I was super high on him in his draft, but that's only one small piece of the puzzle. But
he's not playing any competitive ball for, like, he hasn't even played competitive ball against college players, right?
Yeah, he played high school ball in Australia. He did well in FIBA, but that was, of course, a small sample size because that's a tournament.
JJ Barea does well in FIBA.
Yeah. New Orleans Pelicans, 48 wins was their projection. We both wanted to stay away from it because we just didn't really know, and we liked the Anthony Davis for MVP bet. You know, they're having a disappointing year. There's not much else to say about it.
That number was so high.
It was really high.
That number was so crazy, crazy, crazy high. And again, the problem was, like, yeah, you know, Eric Gordon is injury prone, and a couple of the other guys on that team are injury prone, and it's just been a mess. They have AD. They're playing. I don't know what they're doing with AD right now, because sometimes they play him at center. Sometimes they're playing a power forward. They don't have any other bigs really to play him against because Asik's kind of fell off the planet. And, you know, they lost Tyreek. They lost it. They just didn't. And again, this is the same kind of problem that the Magic have, which is like the Pistons have, which is like they don't have enough shooting around it. So, again, I don't blame AD's regression a bit on him because, one, he's being asked to play the five as opposed to the four, and they don't have anything else around them, really. Like,
I'm disappointed at him defensively. I thought he'd be able to handle it a little bit more, but on the offensive end, no, that I have no problem with that.
But the problem is, like, so the underrated, they lost Aminu, right? So, like, the other thing is, like, that.
Well, they lost Aminu. They lost Aminu before that. He was on the Mavericks last year.
Right, you're right. It's 2 years ago, but, like, even that, like, so.
But Poindexter helped.
Yeah, but you play AD at the five, and you play Ryan Anderson at the four. It doesn't really work because Ryan Anderson is a guy you want next to a defensive center, and you can't, if you put AD at the five, you're taking away from some of the stuff that makes him great, right? So you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot with what you're doing, right? So it's a weird. I mean, I thought it was gonna work better, but, like, you know, again, it's like you've got Tyreek and Jrue Holiday and Eric Gordon, and it's not a good mix of talent. Like, the number was way too high on this team.
Yeah.
Right. And I think we liked AD for MVP, but we didn't realize that this was going to happen. We thought, like, oh, Asik was going to play center and he was going to play the four, not what they're doing. And they were going to move Ryan Anderson for something. Right. And that's not what they did. So, I mean, I don't know what are they doing from this point? I mean, do you kind of need to blow it up?
I don't even know what blowing it up means for this team, because it's not like they're going to be able to get out of Omar Asik's contract. You know, blowing it up, obviously you keep Anthony Davis.
Is Omar Asik's contract a bad contract?
It's a terrible contract. I think it might be the worst one in the league.
Isn't it like $10 million?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like $10 million is like pocket change now.
Yeah, but it's really bad pocket change.
Yeah.
There aren't bad contracts. Like, him being the worst contract in the league doesn't mean what it did when Kobe had his deal, when Joe Johnson, David Lee, you know, those guys, truly devastating contracts.
Melo's probably the worst contract in the league right now.
I think it's a year or two shorter, and he's actually a positive basketball player. Like, that's another one of those relative choices, you know, like, for certain teams...
It's a contract that's going to stink more over time.
That's true, but so will Asik's. But Asik's is just smaller. But
I think the problem is, like, yeah, $10 million, it's basically starting, like, it might get close to the MLE pretty soon. So it's like, it's not that like for you could pay Omar Asik $10 million to come off your bench in like 2 years, or a year.
Well, if he can even be off a bench at that point. But anyway, I think that's a little bit of an esoteric argument for
now. Here's the thing. The other problem might be, like, I don't know that these guys have a great – I think – I would say that their training staff is probably subpar.
Yeah, because, definitely subpar.
So Asik might actually be effective on a team that actually has a decent training staff.
Maybe, right? but nobody's trading for him right now. But let's move on to Memphis, team that has some injuries right now. Projected 50.5. Looks like they're going to go under, but of course, that's a lot of that is just that they've been decimated by injuries.
Again, but I think I've been banging this drum for 2 years. I think I said it the year before, and they were lucky on injuries. But I said, look, this is an older team, and they're going to get hurt, right? So, and really, you know, it's just the way it goes because they have a lot of older players. I kind of like what they've done in terms of kind of shuffling their deck and bringing some talent on the board.
Especially getting picks for it. You know, they did that for a good reason. They did well, yeah.
And here's the thing. Actually, they traded away Jeff Green and got Lance back. And actually, I think Lance is a better fit for them.
Sure.
Because they're using him way better than he was being used. They're basically giving him the ball. He's getting usage. And he's being effective for them. So, and like, you know, again, they got a bunch of guys who do things, right? They got Sebo. Like, again, I think this is still a decent team. Can Mark get back before the end of the season?
No, he's out for the year.
Wasn't it a broken leg?
Broken foot.
Oh, ooh, 7-footers. Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah so he's done for the year.
Again, I think that, like, give credit to their GM. They do a really good job of, like, at kind of talent they bring in. I think they made some lateral moves. Now, it's going to be an interesting offseason because I think they're probably going to lose Conley, aren't they?
I don't know what Conley wants. I think this is another one. I think the parallel might be Dwayne Wade, where it's better for everybody if he leaves, but I can't be sure that he will.
So where would Conley go?
A lot of teams are going to offer him money. You know,
you think Chicago is a good destination for Conley?
You know where I want him to go?
Where?
Orlando.
Ooh, but Oladipo, would you like play Oladipo at the two?
Well, you stagger him. You play. I think they would work decently together.
There's only too many guards on that team. I think
there aren't enough guards that can create for other guys. What you do is you tie Conley and Aaron Gordon together, and you say, okay, you guys play together. You build a chemistry and go through. And ideally, then if you were going to do something like that, you draft a point guard this year that is more in line with Conley, and then you try to trade Payton, and then you basically, the idea would be that when Conley's contract is up, he's going to be he'll be kind of the either equal or he'll be replaced by the other dude.
Yeah, I believe you're looking at the starting point guard of the 2016-2017 New York Knickerbockers by Conley. I think
it's possible, but I'm not sure they'll have cleared enough money for it. I would be disappointed with that just because I would rather see Conley go to a team that's going to be successful in the short term.
I think I'd be interested in seeing him next to Porzingis. I think him, Porzingis, and Robin Lopez is whatever they can get for Melo is interesting. If Melo, that no trade, that's what makes that contract really bad is they gave him a no trade.
Yeah, if it had been either they'd given him less money or they hadn't given him a no trade, it would have been fine. Like that, but I killed that signing for that exact reason, and all these Knicks fans got up in arms about it, but that was exactly the rationale.
If you don't give him a no trade, you've already moved him like 4 or 5 times. Like he's, but whatever. That's what makes it kind of dumb because you can get somebody that, like, you've got two good pieces. You got you got Porzingis and Lopez, which are good pieces. A follow's all right. And if you get you get two more guys, you could have a team that could, like, make the playoffs in the East and be interesting in the next few years. But, like, Melo kind of limits you a little bit in what you're trying to do.
That's certainly true. Let's move on to Houston. Houston was, the over-under was set at 55.5. You thought under, I thought over, but we both said to stay away and that the title odds were more interesting. And look at that, they're going way under.
Yeah, that team is a hot mess. I mean, it's just kind of that there's so many distractions on this team. I mean, like adding Lawson was a bad idea. I mean, we thought it was a good idea at the time, I think, for what they're doing. I understood the gamble, but it just didn't work. And I think the problem is, like, when you have a lot of guys like that, if you don't have necessarily a strong locker room presence, like a strong... Like, who's the leader in the locker room for this team? It wasn't the coach. It wasn't McHale. It's not... Who's the guy who's coaching that team now?
J.B. Bickerstaff.
It's not Bickerstaff. It's not Howard. It's not Harden.
Right? And it's not like Ariza is a grizzled vet or something like that. You know, there isn't really that. And this team doesn't have a lifer. They don't have one of those, you know, just... Even if they're not a great player, somebody who's just been on this team for a long time. So, yeah, they have that problem. My question for you is this. Well, I think we both feel he's a very good player. I have this weird feeling that I haven't really said much yet, that this summer would be a great time to trade James Harden.
You don't trade James Harden, right? Let me explain. So what I mean by that is, okay, so basically I always make this argument. I get in this argument with Professor Dave Barry, right? So I argue that you never, ever pay a guard, ever. You never pay a guard unless he's the best guard, like the top three guard in the league, right? So you pay Curry, you play Chris Paul, you pay James Harden, right? And when you have the guy, like the best shooting guard in the league, you can win the title, right? So if you have Kobe, if you have MJ, if you have Harden, you can win the title. And really, if you think about it, like OKC really has never recovered from that trade because, yeah, I mean, like he was the guy who stirred the drink and made everything kind of work, right? And I think regardless of anything else, you keep Harden as your core piece and then you build around them and just get like, just don't get head cases around them. Like putting him and Dwight Howard together was at the end of the day a bad move. One, because Howard just kind of decayed like physically, but two, because they're like immature. Like the concern for this team was like, this team is really immature. Like they're going out and partying and doing all sorts of stuff. And you need guys, right? When you have a guy like that, you need guys who are kind of more stable. Now, I'm going to say this, right? So we know about Harden, right? So we know about Harden because we live in an era where like everything's open. But I'm 100% sure that Michael Jordan was about 10 times worse than anything Harden has ever done, right? Right. And if we lived in an era where, like, if Michael Jordan had played in an era where there was Twitter, Michael Jordan would have blown up Twitter like a million times, right?
I agree with all that, but at the same time, like, his defense seems like the positives were an aberration. What I'm saying with Harden is not like, oh, move him for anything. It's, I feel like this is a year that somebody might still say, hey, he's a year off of finishing number two in the MVP.
What is an equivalent return for James Harden? What are you getting?
It's going to be a mint from your favorite team, the Boston Celtics. I think that's really where you'd piece it together because they have, you know, like I think it would involve at least one, probably two of the Brooklyn picks, and then whatever else of their talent that you know, like kind of not the top tier guys, but whatever else they're interested in.
And I know that was rumored, but the problem is like the Celtics don't need guys right now. The need for this, they need an effective big man. That's what the Celtics need. And here's the thing, like, if you can get Harden, like, if you're the Celtics and you can get Harden, and you get Harden and you don't, if you get Harden and you don't have to give up, let's say, one of the Nets picks and, like, Crowder and Isaiah Thomas, right? And maybe Avery Bradley. If you can keep those three things in the pick, then you have to do it. But ideally, if I'm going to go all in, if I'm the Celtics, I want to get somebody who can actually, like, they get murdered by teams who have size. Like, Karl-Anthony Towns made them cry. Like, big men just go into Boston and just completely wreck them.
Yeah, I'm not saying I would do that deal. I'm saying that I think that's the type of thing that could be out there that I would consider if I'm the Rockets. But I think Danny Ainge sees things differently than I do for a lot of reasons.
The other problem is, like, that contract that James Harden has is actually becoming a really good contract.
Oh, it's a great contract. That's why I think you move him now.
He's on a great contract. It's like, if you're the Houston, you move everybody else. Like, the two guys you want to keep, Ariza. I'd probably even move Ariza, but, like, you keep Harden and you just basically shift the tenor of the guys you have around. You need a better coach, right? You need a better coach who's kind of a solid presence. You need some guys that are a little more mature around them. You can't have like Dwight and his buddy Josh and like Ty Lawson, and it just hasn't worked. And I mean, there's talent there. It's just like, basically that team is just like, it's crazy, right? So like they show up for games and we have a running joke, and like I do Daily Fantasy. We have a running joke is like, is Harden going to show up like looking like he's drunk today, right? And like, and play himself into like shape in the second half, or are they just going to play like out of sorts for like two quarters? And like it happened a couple days back against Portland. They played like crap for two quarters, and then they charged back in the second half when they actually cared. And I've seen this team on TV just look like it's just like, if those guys showed up like they do for games sometimes where I worked, I would send them home, right? And it's just like, it's just, for them, it's not an issue of talent, it's an issue of maturity. They really need to change kind of the composure of the guys that they have there. I wouldn't get rid of Harden, though. That's the guy you keep because of the contract, because it's like, it's going to be really hard for you to replace him with something that works. Like, so if you're getting the guys from Celtics, right, are you getting Brett Stevens too? So I'd rather kind of just like get a better coach and maybe move some pieces around to get better talent around them, right? So get like better, and what I think, maybe not better, but like necessarily like maybe smarter talent or like more mature talent. You know what I mean?
I agree with all that. It's just that I think that the time it will take to get everything around with Harden, you also have the risk with him. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent for the first time. If he leaves and you build around him, he's devastating. Also, for the Celtics specifically, if you can have a backcourt of Harden and Smart, I think that would be amazing to see.
I'm not 100% sold on Smart yet.
Neither am I, but if he doesn't have to be the guy who runs your offense, and he can just be, and then defensively, it's just stick him on the other team's best guy. That's amazing.
The best value for James Harden is running your offense. He's the best value. The best situation for him is he's basically a rich man's. He's Manu Ginobili. That's who he is.
Yeah,
right?
I agree with you.
That's who you want him to be. So you want him to be running your offense. That's what you want.
Yeah. So he can do that on the Celtics. Then if you get him, then if you need to move Isaiah, you move Isaiah. It's happened before.
Yeah. I mean, it's.
But again, I'm not saying like just dump him for anything. I'm saying you hope that somebody, if this is the year where I would place those little calls with teams that have the right assets and say, hey, if you're interested, like let's say for whatever reason, like the Lakers wanted to make a mistake trade and let's say they kept their pick this year and they were willing to give up like D'Angelo Russell and that pick. Like I think that would be something that would be the foundation of a great James Harden trade if I were Houston.
Agree.
Yeah, so you just that you and so you're not you're you don't feel the pressure to do it. That the pressure would come in another year or two, but you're basically you're creating the mistake feel and you're just leaving it out there and you're hoping somebody does it, and if nobody does it, then you keep them and you're happy.
Agree.
Now we'll move to the team that traded James Harden, Oklahoma City. Over under was set at 57. We both thought the under was the better bet, but to stay away from it, and that Durant for MVP was better. And I think that I still think it was too high.
It was too high. I mean, like it was 57, right?
Yes.
So, and right now we're projected at 53. We liked the under, and for the reasons we liked it, right? So we said stay away, but the reasons we liked this, like we thought that's like Durant was going to miss some times. He did. We thought that Enes Kanter, they overpaid him, was a terrible contract. He couldn't stay off the court against like the better teams. This is true. Same thing with Waiters. And again, this is the problem. Like they don't have a can actually stay on the court against some of the better teams. And you know, I think that we also were a little concerned about Billy Donovan. Although Donovan has actually gotten better as the season has gone on. He's doing the whole thing now where he's staggering them, and this has helped KD tremendously. It's helped Russ tremendously. They still have the problem against the better teams that like they don't have enough talent to surround Westbrook and KD. That's at the end of the day. I mean, that's they can't get into like they can't. I don't think they can't beat San Antonio or Golden State in the series with the talent they surround those two guys with. And I think that at the end of the day, that's what's going to cost them those two guys, right? So, I mean, do you disagree with that?
I think that's a part of it. That's you know the bets they made I think were bad at the time and it look worse now. You know, Kanter, of course, is Kanter, Deion Waiters. Morrow, you know, could have worked, didn't work. I think they did a nice job with Foy. But yeah, you're looking at the total package, and they just don't have the constituent pieces. I still think that the incandescence of their two guys is enough to give them a decent chance against those teams, but of course not favorites, not anything close to that. But they're just so talented that they can do it. But as you said, you know, like they're... What saddens me about Oklahoma City is something we've talked about with a couple teams, which is this. So let's say they don't make the NBA Finals this year, which I think is a very reasonable bet. What reason is there to believe, even if they bring every single player back, let's say the best case offseason, reasonable offseason scenario happens for them, they're not better next year. They're the same.
KD's not coming back.
I think he's coming back next year. I think he's going to sign a 1+1. I wrote about it today for the Sporting News. That's what I think is going to happen. He's going to do that because it gives him plausible deniability. There are a lot of reasons for it. But my instinct is that he is not back there.
Why does he take the 1+1 with them and not with somebody else?
That's his best chance of winning a title next year. And they still have his bird rights. You're giving them a chance. There's no reason for him to sign that contract.
Why wouldn't he go? If he wants to win, if he wants to make a finals, why doesn't he just go east?
Well, it's not about making the finals. I think his goal is winning a title, and winning a title and making the finals are different.
He wants to make the finals or win the title. You either go to the Warriors or go to the East. That's two things you need to do.
But I think the other part of this is if you're going to leave, you leave in a more serious way. And what also, and I wrote this in the piece, that's a part of the logic that I think he is going to be using. I, of course, haven't talked to him about this, is some of the teams in desirable cities are really, really uncertain right now. You know, the Knicks, the Lakers, even the Clippers to a point. And 1 year of seeing what those teams do, seeing what they don't do, will give him much better information. So the only way for me that he leaves this year is for a team that might not be able to sign him next year, which is the Warriors, basically. Maybe the Wizards, but the Wizards could probably make it work right now if they don't spend stupidly this summer.
Yeah, but again, the problem with the Wizards is the Wizards are talented, but they're not well coached. Right, that's my issue. If they were better coached, that'd be a better option, I think.
But they can hire a new coach. Like they could hire Kevin Ollie or whoever else. I mean, I'm not saying Ollie would be a great NBA coach. He'd be better than Whitman, though.
Let me say this: does he have a better shot at winning the title with the Thunder or with the Wizards with a better coach?
Next season, I think he has a better chance with the Thunder. But I agree with you that it's probably closer than many think.
I mean, like that team. Like it has, I would say right now the talent on the, like if you, let's take KD out of the equation, right? KD's out of the equation. And we're comparing the Thunder roster versus the Wizards roster. I think the Wizards roster might be slightly better, right?
It's less top heavy, but it has better balance.
The Thunder has the best player, but I think actually the distance between Wall and Russ Westbrook has actually shrunk. Right.
Agreed.
But then
Russ is having one hell of a year. But yeah, Wall is doing really well.
Wall is also having a hell of a year too. I mean, I think that. But then you start looking at the rest of the guys on that roster, and I think that man, if you put KD on that Wizards team, aren't they the favorite? Aren't they the heavy favorites to make the finals out of the East?
I wouldn't say they're the heavy favorites. I'd say they have a very good chance of being. You know, it'd be them and the Cavs. But I think you'd have a good argument that they'd be better than Cleveland, especially if age takes them down another peg in another year, specifically LeBron. Right. But yeah, so I can see that, but I don't think you make that move unless you're totally sure of it, and you can't be sure with this, especially when the Wizards have had, you know, they've had a shaky GM for years, they've had a shaky coach for years, and they've done nothing about it.
Agree. No, it's all fair points. I mean, it's...
Like, to me, if he leaves, it should be for the Warriors, and there are a million reasons why he should and should not do that. But that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, we agree on that. Yeah. So what do you think their odds are of winning the title this year?
10 to 15%.
That high?
Yeah, because I could see... Well, first of all, there's the possibility of injury to one or both teams, which of the teams above them, which I think would really help them. And if they make the finals, they're favorites in it. So
I think it's got to be more like 5 to 10% because they'd have to be the Spurs and the Warriors. On the road.
Yeah, that's true. I understand that, but
then they have to beat the Cavs, which I think that would be. They can beat the Cavs, but I think it's not an automatic win by any means.
Yeah, I guess if I were really thinking about it, they would probably get, let's say, a puncher's chance, so 20%, let's say, against both the Spurs and the Warriors. Maybe a little bit higher, maybe 30, maybe like, you know, maybe 1 in 3. Maybe that's more fair. But 1 in 3 times 1 in 3 times whatever the finals odds are is lower, and the chances of an injury aren't that high. So, you know, they're high. So, yeah, I mean, you're probably right. It is a little bit lower than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird sort of place, but I think that, you know, again, they're in the wrong conference, and that kind of hurts them across the board. You know?
Speaking of being in the wrong conference, the Los Angeles Clippers. They were over-under was set at 57, and you said push, I said under. I think they're going under.
Yeah, right now I've got it under. They're predicted at 53. You know, Blake has been out for forever for this team, and that makes a difference. What do you think of I think, again, the problem with this team is the best possible use for Chris Paul and Blake Griffin is not playing with each other, right? And this has been kind of what I've said. Like, they're both kind of better when the other's not there, right?
So I think it's a big problem. It is, because they're both great basketball players, but they don't mesh perfectly together. And what basically Blake Griffin does a nice job of keeping an offense, you know, above water, but you don't need to do that with Chris Paul because that's what Chris Paul's for.
Yeah. So if you were keeping one of them, who would you keep?
Well, I've written before that I think the Clippers should have seriously considered trading Chris Paul. I think you should, honestly, I think they should trade both of them. I don't think I think the problem is that they're both like they're both at this stage where they're very good players. Nobody's contesting that. When I wrote the Chris Paul piece for the Sporting News, which got picked up by a bunch of places, a lot of people were like, "Oh, you think Chris Paul's a bad player?" I don't. Second team All NBA this year. I think he's an excellent player, but I am scared of small point guards in their 30s. And Blake Griffin is a very good basketball player, but he's going to hit free agency soon, and he's an acquired taste. He's not perfect for the modern NBA. He's not perfect for every team.
Yeah, there was a rumor that Orlando offered, I think it was Aaron Gordon and Nikola Vucevic and a couple other guys for Griffin. Would you have done that?
Aaron Gordon doesn't cure what ails the Clippers, just in terms of that. And you would be getting Vucevic to trade him. Well, you know, like you can't play him.
You'd have to do another. You can't have Bushwick playing next to on.
No, you straight up. He'd probably be better defensively, just because you wouldn't be relying on him to protect the rim. So it'd be kind of the idea of that DeMarcus Cousins does okay with Willie Cauley-Stein, because you just take him away from the most important thing that he has to do. But I'd consider it, but I think they could probably do better. I like Aaron Gordon, but I'm not convinced that he'll be the best or second best player on a conference finals team. I'm not saying he can't get there. He certainly can. But I'm not sold on it yet. And I think if I were going to move Blake Griffin right now, that would be a prerequisite.
I think what's going to happen is they're going to move him in the offseason. I think that's what's going to end the end game here. And I think he's going to be like, he's going to make some interesting things come in play, right?
Because what do you think their title odds are right now? What would you put it at? Not where the betting line is, but what do you think their chances of winning the titles are? Yeah,
they're going to wind up being the fourth seed, so they get the Warriors in the first round.
Second round.
Oh, that's right. They play the second round, so they get something like Memphis, who I think they win, and then they get the Warriors in the second round. So I would give them something like similar to the Thunder, like maybe 10%, because what the scenario is. 7-8% probably, a little more, because I think that I got to take into account the fact that it's a much rougher series. Well, here's the thing. If Blake is healthy, and I've said this, if Blake is healthy, I think the Cavs don't have anybody that can stop Blake. I think that's you were saying the Clippers, the Cavs beat the Clippers, but I think the problem is, like, in that series, Blake just basically just destroys everything. There's nothing the Cavs can throw at him. Who's covering Blake in a Clippers-Cavs series?
If you put Tristan on him and just force him to shoot jumpers, it could kind of work. It wouldn't be great. It wouldn't be perfect.
It would not be good. I mean, I think it would be like LeBron can't do it. Tristan,
but then you'd have love on DeAndre, and that would just be a disaster.
I think in that series, the Clippers are bad. Like, it's a styles may fight, and the Clippers would be a bad matchup for the Cavs. But again, I think it's like seven. So they need something. They need the Warriors not to be 100%. Right.
Yeah, I'd have their odds at less than 5%, but not much less. You know, I'd have, so it's pretty close to you. But
the problem is, like, they match up well against the Spurs, and they match up well against the Cavs. That's the thing for them, right? They don't want the Thunder, they don't want the Warriors. They're gonna get the Warriors or the Thunder, right? So I think that's what happens. They'd have to beat the Warriors, and that's a tall order. They have to be healthy, and the Warriors would something would have to be wrong with the Warriors for them to win that series.
Yeah.
Particularly, they're going on the road to do it, and you've seen them. They basically, like, they get into a game against the Warriors and just blow that game, right? Like, yeah. they just snake bit against that team. So I think it's like 5%.
Yeah,
right? It's not out of the realm. I wouldn't say it's not out of the realm of possibility.
San Antonio was set at 57. We both leaned on the under, but of course I'd stay away because it's Greg Popovich and they're an all-time team.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we both leaned on the under because we thought Pop did not care.
Yeah.
About
it wasn't about seed. It wasn't about their talent level at all.
But Pop apparently cares about the one seed this year. They have not taken a game off the entire season. They've been going hard every single night. They're playing with a historic point margin. This team is really, really good. Any other year, I'd be saying, like, San Antonio's winning the title, but the Warriors exist, right? So, but this is a really good team. I don't know that they've yet found their form. What's really, and I was talking to Evan C. He's the guy behind NBA Wall. We were talking, and we both loved Cal Anderson when he got drafted, right? And we both were really pissed at the Spurs, that he felt the Spurs. And Pop has actually had him buried in, like, development. He's starting to use him because his defense has started to come around. He's starting to do things. And Cal is really a really interesting piece for this team because he opens up a lot of like, weird small ball lineups for them. If he's the primary ball handler, you can do some crazy things if you're the Spurs.
You can play some tall ball with him too if you wanted.
Yeah, if you throw Kyle, like if he's an effective player and he's starting to look like it, if you're throwing him and Danny Green, who's actually playing well, and Kawhi as your 1-2-3, that matches up really interestingly against the Warriors, right? So again, Pop treats the regular season as a laboratory for the playoffs, and everything he's doing this season is he's looking for ways. Everything he did in the offseason, everything he's doing this season, is about playing the Warriors and beating the Warriors. And the other thing that people need to keep in mind, because this has happened before, and I think you and I may have talked about this, where like when he plays the Warriors in the season, he does not reveal all the tricks, right?
So he doesn't reveal any of the tricks.
Yeah, I think that first game they played, you can kind of throw it out. You like the same that game against the Warriors and the game against the Cavs is the two games in the season where like I would go like, I don't think he threw anything out of that playbook in those two games. Right?
Well, that's why I'm so pissed they're playing twice in the last week of the season. It's because it's a guarantee that they're not going to do anything then.
Yeah, I mean, I understood. I think we talked about this in the initial. I understood why they got LaMarcus. LaMarcus makes it interesting because he hits these shots in the middle of their offense that makes it really interesting. The other thing to keep in mind is they haven't really used the three ball offense this year, right? So they're putting this historic point margin out there. They're beating the crap out of people. And we know they're not running at the highest possible gear, right? Would you agree with me on that?
Of course.
It's insane to say that they're putting up these historic point margins. They're really kind of going fourth. They're going fourth gear. They're playing Timmy 25 points, 25 minutes a night. They're resting everybody. And I think that again, if they were in the East, they would have to take the odds of them like making the finals off the board, right? They're just it now. Nobody in the East is going to beat them before making it. But like they're playing in the West, it's going to be really interesting. And I think it really is going to come down to the fact that it's going to come down to how healthy. Like if they need Danny, they need Kawhi, and they really probably need either healthy Tony, but I think they need a secondary ball, and like Cal Anderson could be the answer. Right? That's the thing I'm watching for them. Right? They need somebody else that can like stay on the court versus the Warriors. And Manu's kind of hurt, and he's not the answer. And Tony can be kind of bad in spurts. Patty's actually been playing well too. Patty's been playing decently, but I don't know if he's the defender he was two or three years ago when they beat the Warriors, right? I mean, you kind of get what I'm saying. Like, they need the guys that can stay in front of Curry and Clay, right?
There are so many reasons that I think that the Spurs they're such a great team, but the Warriors are very well suited to capitalizing on their mismatches. The big men that they have are talented. They're not great handling pick and rolls, so the Warriors happen to have like one of the most dangerous pick and rolls in the league, and one that's specifically hard for slower big men to handle. So that's going to be a big challenge for them. And so you can talk about, and this is something that I believe, is that if when they get into a series, that if they're going to run a lot of Draymond, Steph pick and roll, then you have Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard as the two guys on that pick and roll. So meaning however you want to define the assignments, it's those two guys. What that means is neither one of those guys, of course, can be a primary ball handler. Neither one of those guys is really a secondary. I mean, Kawhi can do it in bits, but I don't think that's what he's best at. So you're asking for a lot from the other three guys. And so if you have to do that, and you can't play those guys, I don't think you can play Danny Green 35, 38 minutes a game, and they don't have a second player. Jonathan Simmons, I don't think he's that player. He does a lot of things well. He's more of a guy you stick on Clay, and Clay's not going to have as good a night. And Jonathan Simmons also is not a ball handler. He's not a secondary or primary ball handler. So they're going to have to do some different stuff. I fully believe that they are capable of it. And you're right. I mean, this is an all-time team that could very well be the best team in league history to not win a championship.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's that Milwaukee team with Kareem, but like these teams are that good.
Yeah.
And an underrated point that I was making to somebody, which is like they're arguing, the guy writes for 538. We were talking about this. I was arguing that basically the fact that like the Warriors and the Spurs are going to win so many games is even more impressive than the 72-win Bulls, because the Bulls did it the year after expansion.
Right.
And right now we are as far away from expansion as we've ever been in the NBA. So like the standard deviation between 41 wins and getting to this. So basically, if the Warriors win 72 games, they're more standard deviation away from the expected, like from the expected wins than the Bulls were in that season, because it was an expansion year, right?
Yeah, so I mean, and there are bad teams this year, but it's a different type of thing.
Well, they're also not throwing guys at like they're not playing their guys like as many minutes as teams play way back when, which makes it even harder, you know. So it's a really kind of interesting and impressive feat, right? That's kind of where we are, and it's, you know, the Spurs, they have a plan. I think they're very well set up for the next few years, right? So they did a really good job at getting a nice core together. That Danny Green contract was insane. They got LMA, they got Kawhi, they got Kyle, they got guys on this team. Even now, even if Tim retires and Tony retires and or Tony, like, you know, is on the end, Manu can't play, then they're still set up as a 50-win team for the next such and such. You know, who they really miss?
Splitter.
They miss Splitter. And because Splitter was a really good defender on fours and a really good rim protector. And for the role that they had him on that team, like where he doesn't have any offensive responsibilities and he just can take some guys out, he was a really good guy to have. And
he did pretty well on Blake Griffin, didn't he?
Yeah, he did very well on Blake Griffin. The issue, like, and again, the problem is, like, now when Timmy's out, like, they don't necessarily have a rim protector. Like, I mean, they can throw David West out there, but, like, you know, they could have a problem against teams with size. Like, so basically, David West is about beating the Warriors, not about beating, like, say, the Thunder or the Clippers.
And they don't have athletic size, which is a concern for me because that's one of the things that does well against the Warriors.
Yeah, this is why the Cal Anderson thing is interesting, because you can basically, if you can use him at the 1, 2, or 3, then you can go with a small ball lineup with Kawhi at the 4. And if you can go with Kawhi at the 4 against the Warriors, then that becomes really interesting. If you don't have to put Kawhi on Curry or Clay, then you can basically do some things and like you can put Kawhi on Dre, and that becomes really interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure that's where I think they're going.
Yeah, I'm sure Pop is thinking, like, he's sitting in the lap thinking about this sort of thing.
For sure. Absolutely. Well, we'll do the Warriors. They were projected at 59.5, and they're close to it already. So we already knew about that. We both like the over for obvious reasons, and they're an all-time team.
Yeah, we expected them to be really, really, really good. We didn't expect quite this, and I think
how could you?
The gauge I use for this, like, there's a guy I know I follow who's a on Twitter, Miami Heat Index. He's a massive Heat fan, right? And he's one of these, like, old style basketball fans that he likes salty teams that beat people. He did not like the Warriors a couple years back. And I kept telling him, like, this team, they take things personally. They get pissed, they get mad, they go out, and they don't just beat people. They want to beat people and just basically it's like the salty, like burn the ground and salt the earth, right? They want to beat the team so badly that they don't get back up. And it's a chippiness that they have, and they take these personally, right? So I'm sure, like, and I remember, like, the quote from Curry, like, we apologize for looking into a championship. And this season has just been about that. I mean, again, and I think, and I don't know if we've talked about this, but so I keep numbers for players since 1986, right? And Steph Curry made me reset my axis last year, and he made him reset my axis again. He was completely off the scale last year. He's completely off the scale. After I reset everything, I have to reset because I couldn't find him because he was completely off the scale. What he's doing in terms of value for a single player is unprecedented, right? We've never seen this, right? We've never seen a guy who should be covered at half court and, like, could take shots from half court and make them as a good shot. Like, he can basically, like, that shot against the Thunder, like, the thing about that shot is, like, he walked up, he looked at it and said, like, I can make the shot, right? Like, it was like basically like a 15-footer for him. And, like, not only was it a 15-footer for him, but everybody expected the ball to go in. And, like, you know, I've seen, do you remember the Indiana game a couple weeks back?
Yeah.
Where he made the two half-court shots, one after the buzzer and then the other one he made. And Indiana was actually was picking him up at half-court.
Yeah, you have
like,
to.
He made one of them. Like, Indiana's probably the smartest team defensively in the league. And they were picking him up at half-court and covering him. He just completely resets the curve. And having him, and having that staff that's kind of smart about it, just makes their potential so hard. Which is, I mean, this is why, like, I don't get people, like, why are people hate on this team? And I'm like, dude, this is, like, the best basketball you may see in your lifetime. Enjoy it. Like, some people are, like, too young to remember the Bulls, but, like, it's the same thing. Like, the Bulls would win games that they had no right to win. And, like, the Warriors do the same thing. They had no right to win that game against the Thunder, but they went out and did, right? Yeah. They just kind of willed themselves to victory. That's kind of, you know, it's amazing. It's impressive. And the fact that we're getting, like, two all-time teams in the same season, right? I mean, like, you know, we had that Heat-Spurs final a couple years back, which was amazing. I think that we're going to get something in the playoffs this year in the West. that's going to be super amazing. Like, we're going to get that. And that is kind of, as a basketball fan, you have to enjoy it.
Yeah, we're gonna get at least two, hopefully, all-time series in this playoffs. Because the Spurs Thunder series and whoever wins that against the Warriors.
So where would you put their odds to win the title?
65?
Who is the biggest threat?
Whoever wins the Spurs Thunder, does that count? Or is it just, if I had to pick, I'd probably say the Thunder, but it's hard. Between the Spurs at the same point are so good. It's between those two teams. It's not the Cavs.
Yeah, I think head-to-head, right? I give a lot of credit to Kawhi, right? So I think Kawhi is great. I think Kawhi shuts them. That's why I think the Thunder are going to have a real problem, because I know that, like, Kawhi gets up for these games against the Thunder, right? And so I think that that's a matchup that doesn't favor them. And I think that in a series with the Spurs, it's going to come down to whether they can hang with them, like, athletically. That's the thing, right?
Do you want to hear my theory?
Yeah.
I think the Warriors would rather face the Spurs than the Thunder, and I think the Spurs match up super well with the Thunder. So what happens is the hardest matchup is going to be taken off the table already, because Kawhi, as you said, incredible player, and he's great as an island guy, Kawhi Land, whatever you want to call it, and he's really good as a help defender. But his value against OKC in particular is super duper high, because they have the best isolation score in basketball. And he doesn't have as much of a place to be against the Warriors. So I think that the Spurs are perfectly suited to beating the Thunder. I mean, obviously they don't have the perfect personnel, but their top end guys are super good in that matchup, and they're incredibly well coached. They're better coached than the Thunder, obviously. So I actually in some ways feel relatively confident about that series.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. I think the Warriors are the balls. I like the biggest favorite to win the title. On a normal year, they would be the biggest favorite. I think having the Spurs makes it a little less overwhelming, and having the Thunder, because I think they have a better chance. But like, yeah, in a normal year, we're basically saying like, no, 80%, right?
Right. That's what I was going to say, 80% is what it would be.
But historically, teams that are this good, that are defending champions, win, right? And I think that's the key. I mean, like, it would take, you know, it would be something like the 2008 Celtics, right? So the only reason the 2008 Celtics don't win the 2009 title is because Kevin Garnett goes down, right? And then Kevin Garnett goes down, then the backup, God, I forget his name, his backup power forward goes down, and they're left with Big Baby as their starting power forward in the playoffs. And that's the kind of thing that would have to happen for the Warriors.
You also don't usually have an opponent as good as the Spurs are. You know, like, that's the other part of this, is that usually when a team is coming for a back-to-back title, they don't have an all-time team staring them in the face. The parallel is with the Milwaukee Bucks and the Lakers.
Yeah, and that's a completely different era. I mean, like, maybe the Jazz, right? So the Jazz against the Bulls is the other kind of positive example. I don't know about the 2008 Lakers. I don't know if I consider that team kind of the 2010, but not the 2008. I'm trying to think, like,
the Miami team that lost to the Spurs wasn't the Miami team that won the title before.
Oh, true. The best team we've seen to not win the title is that Spurs team.
Oh, the one that lost to the Ray Allen shot?
The one that had the one that they brought the trophy out.
Yeah.
The trophy was on the floor. And then, and that was, again, we talked about it before. That's the greatest finals we've seen, I think. And yeah, that was the best team that didn't win the title. And I think that we are going to have a team that's going to be probably every bit as good as that team not win the title this year.
Probably better. Right? I would say that there is a very real chance that the team whichever of those teams doesn't win the title is the best team in NBA history not to.
Wow. I think, again, let's say, if it was the Warriors, I'd probably agree with you. If it's the Spurs, I don't know if the Spurs team is necessarily better than that Spurs team. Because
Kawhi is so much better now than he was.
Yeah, but like...
But Manu Duncan, and Tony are worse.
Tony hasn't been the same since he, like, rolled his ankle in that game, in that series.
It's true. Yeah, it's amazing that it would probably be between those two teams. There are a few others that are in the conversation. But yeah, that's it. We're going to have that conversation this year anyway, because no matter what, an all-time team isn't winning the title. But yeah, there is more time to think about it.
Anything you want to see in the playoffs? Any series you'd like to see? What's the series you'd like to see?
Utah Clippers, it's not going to happen. That's one I'd like to see. In the East, Pacers-Cavs in any round, first, second round, don't really care which.
We have to, honestly, I think we must get Thunder, Spurs, and then Spurs, Warriors. Because if we don't, we will be badly served if we don't get those two series.
Well, I've said before that I'm gonna, as a basketball fan, I'm gonna be devastated if we never get a Thunder Warriors series with these teams as presently constituted. Because obviously that Spurs Warriors series was years ago, but to never get that, especially considering these teams have such a penchant for playing amazing games against one another. But Spurs Warriors this year is bigger than that. Like, that's a series that if we don't get it, that's one of the all-time what-ifs if it doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's I agree with that. I mean, I think, wow. I mean, we should have gotten, except for Chris Paul, Chris Paul being masterful, we should be. That first round series last year, there's going to be a team in the first round in the West that's going to lose. It's going to be, fantastic, right?
I'll give you another series I want to see that's less high profile. If it ever got to be Celtics Wizards, I would love to see that.
Yeah, I think what you're gonna see. I think what you're gonna see is you're gonna see the Celtics, sixth seed in the East. Who the hell is gonna be the sixth seed in the East?
We don't know yet. It's way too open, which is fun because I always feel like in those situations, there are always two series that you really want to see and they never happen. But it's always fun to see whether they will.
It feels like it's gonna be Celtics Hawks probably.
Ugh, that's not what I want.
And then you get you get Hornets.
No, because though I don't. You mean it's the 4-5?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I think maybe the Pacers get up there. There are a lot of possibilities, and the 4-5 series is going to be a total coin flip in terms of whether it's fun. If the Pacers can get up to the 5, then you see that second round series with Pacers Cavs, which would be awesome.
If it was the Celtics Hawks, basically, I'm going to be glad I have NBA TV.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be your NBA TV series.
Yeah.
So. Oh, actually, let me give the totals. So basically, we have one, two, three. Basically, out of 27 teams, I didn't call three teams, right? And out of the ones, Danny picked 60% of the teams right, and I picked 74% of the teams right.
Nice.
With three teams still left on the table, basically.
And I think some of the ones that we got wrong were the stayaways anyway. So
yeah, a bunch of the ones we got wrong were no, don't touch them. I think the big miss is probably the Sixers, but I think that was understandable.
And me with the Raptors.
I think, yeah, the Nets, we were off. We said don't touch. We were 50% on the Pacers, but we said stay away. We missed the Wizards, but again, that's been like a walking wounded. The Raptors, we were 50-50. And again, I think I expected things to happen that didn't, but again, we had them have a career year. So I don't know if we can take credit for that one. The Bulls, we were 50-50.
But we said stay away.
Yeah, but we said stay away. I mean, but that number was, that 49.5 was just silly.
Yeah.
And the Hawks are disappointing. We're both disappointed in the Hawks. I think the Nuggets are kind of a bit understandable because, again, they've also had all these injuries that, they lost Gallo, they lost a bunch of guys. The Suns, same thing, injury train. Mavs, I think you just didn't trust Rick Carlisle enough.
And
the Rockets, where I think partly I was kind of scared by the fact that Harden was dating Kardashian. That's not a good sign. That means his mind was not on basketball. Clippers, but again, I think I'll say this. I mean, I didn't expect Blake's what on. He's gonna miss 30-40 games.
I think it's around 30.
Yeah, that's more than I expected actually, yeah. Even with a lot. And the Spurs, And again, history kind of taught us that the Spurs don't care about seeding, but apparently this year they kind of do, right?
Or they're so good that they're just winning anyway.
Yeah, I think the other problem is their bench unit is so good that even in blowouts, it used to be you'll have these teams come back in blowouts, but it's really hard to come back against the Spurs bench unit, right?
Yeah,
because it's
and their bench unit tries, which is also a big difference.
It's oh, we're up 15. Oh God, here comes Boban. Oh crap. And they have all these guys, Jonathan Simmons and all these guys who actually Patty, who are coming off the bench, who are David West, Boris Diaw, who are really good, right?
Yeah.
It's an understated thing that the Warriors and the Spurs do, which is they get the guy who used to be the best guy on his team. And the Warriors have Bogut, they have Iguodala. Iguodala used to be the best guy on the team that went deep in the playoffs, right? Two teams in the East and the West, right? And you add these guys and so that means your second unit is rolling with guys that, the playoff team thing. These benches could make playoffs in other conferences, basically.
Yeah, it really is an incredible year. Thanks so much for taking time. It's great talking with you, man.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Danny.
Thanks again to Arturo Galletti for coming on. You can read him at basketballnumbers.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Arturo Galletti. That's ArturoGalletti. It was a lot of fun doing this and really going through. I'm pretty proud of the predictions we did. He talked about the percentages, but I think a lot of the ones that we got wrong, quote unquote, were stayaways. And so in terms of the actual, you know, like the ones that we encouraged, I think it did pretty well. Anyway, a lot of fun regardless. No, I didn't put any money on it, so it's fun to be right. But, you know, going through all that kind of stuff, really happy, you know, with where the podcast is going. Thrilled with, if you haven't listened to some of the more recent episodes, Jim Barnett, Lee Jenkins, Jonathan Charks, I think all of those are pretty timeless in that sense. And that is part of what I want to do with Real Jam Radio, is have it be a little bit more in that vein, so you can listen to it, you know, a month, 2 months after the fact, and hopefully still get more than a little bit out of it. If you have any ideas in terms of guests or whatever, you can reach out to me at Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux, Danny LaRue NBA on Facebook, or DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. I read everything, I respond to it, and I really do appreciate it. Also, you can use the RealGM SeatGeek code. I read about SeatGeek in the prior episode, the Eastern Conference, but again, you should use it. Promo code is $20 off your first order. It helps us, it helps you, and it helps SeatGeek know that you came from us. So that helps, really. It's a great thing that they're doing, and for a product I use, it's even more fun. Beyond that, you know, things are going well. Got a lot going for the sporting news. Going to bring back some CBA encyclopedia stuff for Real GM. I'm actually working on a piece that I didn't want to write on kind of the idea of medical-induced retirements, but the idea of the uncertainty with Chris Bosch made me want to kind of do that. Not that it's going to happen with him, hopefully, but just as it made me think of, hey, this is a gap in the CBA encyclopedia, so probably going to work on that today. And yeah, a bunch of other stuff. Started off-season previews for the Sporting News, going to do all 30 teams in the next couple months. Already actually have the first batch written, but, you know, releasing it over time to build interest and all that fun stuff. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for reading. Take care and make it a great day.